Hello, humans. This was a bonus episode of Audio Phase that was recorded as a continued part of episode 18. We mostly covered all of the bases we usually would in episode 18, like the standard one, you know, all the music news. We reviewed the Foo Fighters' new album, we talked about that, and we had our normal, like, discussions about, like, music-related news and culture news of the week. And we went into a lot of detail and went a lot of, like, interesting conversations. I think it's a really good episode. That being said, I want to cut out the main part of the episode where we talk about things we usually did from this part of the episode, which is a little different from most episodes of Audio Phase. Instead of talking about a specific story or like set of stories and reviewing things, we talk more about topics. On the first half of the podcast, we talk a lot about recovery and music and their related roles to each other. We talk about Lady Gaga and some of the health issues she's going through, as well as Talking Monster. She's about to release an album soon, but she just underwent brain surgery. And so she talks about how she had to relearn music and things like that. And then we also talk from Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails, also works at Apple, and he talks about the role that drugs, alcohol, and addiction have played along with his music. And so I think both were really interesting conversations, and it was really cool, but I did want to break them up into two parts, so like, it was very clear what you're getting in each one. Yeah, Tammy was a very fun guest to have, and we'll probably have her back on at some point. It'd be great to have like a three-person episode between Sean, Tammy, and I. Yeah, Sean was gone this week. He was racing in a triathlon in Malibu, and I can say, because this is post-production Dan from the internet, and I'm recording after, that he got second place in his age group, so congratulations to Sean. He is probably currently asleep. Actually, no. I told him that the episode in total was 3 hours long, and he just messaged me going like, ow, what the hell? So, Sean is alive and well. He'll be on the next episode. We'll be talking about a lot of things, and can't wait to hear his take on how he thinks we reviewed the Foo Fighters, because he really likes the Foo Fighters. But yeah, long story short, the next episode, the episode you're listening to that's currently playing, will be about the role of recovery in music, and at the end we'll be talking about playlist creation and how Tammy creates her playlists. Links will be in the description for all the relevant things, but if you're listening to this bonus episode because you're like, oh, curious, what's the bonus? Definitely listen to the episode before this. I released it both on the same day, and that will be like a normal standard Audio Phase episode, just with Tammy as a guest as Sean was out. So yeah, check that out, and hope you like it. So when I brought up doing the podcast, Tammy had brought up this really interesting article about Talking Monster, an artist that you're going to be seeing very soon. This was done in Pitchfork by Sasha Geffen, contributor for Pitchfork. It kind of details Talking Monster's story about going through brain surgery, and how two brain surgeries actually. And she lost a lot of her speech and cognitive abilities. Of course, however, she, like, regained them and is, like, going to be... Has that album come out yet, or...?
No, so she's been releasing singles,
right.
As, like, a
promotion.
Promotional shit for her album. I'm actually gonna see her in September before her album officially comes out.
Right.
So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I've always wondered what artists do for them, because, like, usually artists tour to promote an album, but I mean, what songs do you perform when the album's not out yet? I mean, you will perform songs from the album, and like you said, she's had singles. Now's a great time to inform you of the Audio Phase rule, the one rule. Sean and I really quickly saw through these, we saw through single releases as promotional events for artists, and so we usually talk about the first single an artist will release in the upcoming, in the lead up to the new album. We usually don't really, like, spend a lot of time devoting to each new single release. Instead, we like to, like, look at the first single as, like, a precursor, like, an idea of what the new album might sound like. And then we look at the new album and all the other singles, like, kind of as a whole. You can do whatever you want to. That's just, like, our dumb arbitrary rule. I just want to let you know. And any new listeners know. If you're a new listener, wow, what an experience. But, anyway, so we're kind of talking in this segment about the interconnection between music and recovery, because as Tammy like pitched the story about Talking Monster, I was also looking at a story about Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails, also part of Apple Music. We've talked about him a little bit on the podcast, and he opened up a little bit in an interview with some outlet, I forget, Kerrang, I believe, where he's describing his battle with, like, drugs and addiction. Mm-hmm. And this also happened to come out at the same time when it was announced that Lady Gaga was being hospitalized because of her, like, fibromyalgia.
All the commercials for fibromyalgia.
I haven't seen commercials for fibromyalgia, but I also don't watch a lot of TV.
There you have it.
Yeah. And so, like, all these things kind of happened together as we're leading up to the show, and so I think it was, like, a really good topic to kind of discuss, but, like, Tam, I'd love to hear your thoughts on, like, all of these things. Or, like, however you want to start. However
okay.
you want to jump into it.
Okay, well,
this will be an open-ended conversation, so wherever you want to go.
All right, well, I feel like, so Togemonsta's whole, you know, story that I pitched to you was more about, like, the sheer amazement at the process that an artist has in kind of, like, you know, regaining that footing. But, you know, if we want to go based off of, I'll, like, loop back to Togemonsta at the end of this. But, so, Lady Gaga being hospitalized, like, she spoke a lot to her fans, mostly through Twitter, as highlighted in the Consequence of Sound article, that, you know, she's dealing with fibromyalgia, you know, the way she thought that she could cope with it wasn't necessarily the proper way to, like, address the issue. And I think it's really, how should I say this? It's refreshing. And I wholeheartedly am, like, in love with and support this idea that an artist is able to be open and honest with their fans about what they're going through, because it kind of brings us back to this reoccurring theme of artists being, like, people at the end of the day. Lady Gaga is, at the end of the day, a person. Yes, she might present herself as a performer in the commercial sense or in the way that we see her, but she is so much more than that. She has real pain, not just emotional pain that she puts into her work, but the physical pain that she experiences while she's on tour, trying to be there for her fans and present herself in a certain way, like, full of energy. I mean, all of that is so demanding. And for her to be able to say that I want to take some space and some time to take care of myself and my body is amazing. And I completely love and appreciate that. And I think that artists should feel like they can speak more about what they're going through and actually be there for themselves, you know? The fact that Lady Gaga is able to distance herself from, like, the expectations that people have of her, just like Danny Brown and just like all the other artists we've discussed, the fact that she's able to say, you know, I know you guys want me to be there for you touring, but I need to, like, be there for myself. It's kind of the same as Trent Reznor saying that I don't need to be stuck in this endless cycle of consuming drugs, you know? There's this part in the article that I really love that really speaks to me, especially in debates about art and mental health, because people have this notion that in order to be an artist, a really, like, effective or emotive or, like, powerful, you know, provocative person that, like, creates such pieces that other people can, like, think about, it's really interesting because, here, I'm just going to directly quote the article because he says it perfectly.
Just so we're, like, totally clear, and I'll try to link to this article in the show notes, we're referring to an NME article about Trent Reznor, and just to provide a little bit of context,
about the impact that drugs had on
yeah,
his life.
Yeah, so, like, Trent Reznor, from Nine Inch Nails, also from Apple Music, as I kind of mentioned earlier, he goes into this conversation about the impact of drugs and alcohol in his life. From there, from what I've said, Tammy, go ahead and continue.
Yeah, so he's, you know, he's talking about, like, the fact that, like, drugs, alcohol, it's kind of been that escape, as, you know, even the average person uses oftentimes substances to be. It's your escape from reality. You don't want to deal with what's right in front of you. And he says, there was an awkward adjustment of learning how to live without that, without those things, those people, those crutches and habits. Once I got on stable ground and started to understand how my brain worked, without all of that, musically at least, I can do more because I can remember what I did. I can think deeper about these things. And that, like, 1000% resonates with me, because for me it's like, you know what, there was a part of me that felt so tortured, that felt like I was suffering, and that felt like I was, you know, going through something, and I was also abusing a lot of different substances at the time. Not a lot, just two specific ones, but for me it's like, you know, I am actively working to grow as a person, to deviate from relying on those crutches and be supportive for myself, to be there for what my body needs, what my soul needs, what my spirit needs. And Trent Reznor is doing exactly that. And he's still there, and he's able to think clearly. I'm able to think clearly, you know, like, you have so much more clarity about who you are, and that creates a space for art and expression that not a lot of people are able to see when they think that art always has to be about pain.
Right.
Because it can totally be about healing.
Yeah. It, like, so much of art can, like, art can, as an expression, can mean so many different things. It can be about, and, like, well, I think a better way to put it is this. Art can be about any moment of any one of the processes that humans go through in dealing with emotion. So you can deconstruct grief. For example, you can deconstruct sadness, or you can deconstruct happiness and love mm-hmm. into different subcategories within that, and you can devote, like, a song or an album to any of these topics, or any a number of other topics, like, or you can choose a combination of these emotions or feelings.
Yeah.
And what else you can bring to that are your personal experiences. And so, as a musician, you are the physical arbiter for these ideas and these expressions, all these abstract concepts. You are the person that makes, that allows these things to manifest themselves and come together sonically and lyrically and, like, from a pathos perspective, like, bringing all of this together in, like, one musical piece. And so in that, you're going to bring yourself to that. Whatever you're coming to, whatever you bring to yourself in that time you're creating the music, that's what you're going to bring to it. And we've talked about this, in this overarching, like, conversation so many times, ad fucking nauseam, with each artist and each, like, from, like, R. Kelly down to Foo Fighters to, like, everyone we've talked about. We've always talked about their motives and what they're bringing to the album, both musically, but also, like, very much so emotionally. And so, I think that when you're having these conversations about artists, like I've said before, you can't divorce, like, what they're going through from what they're dealing with. So it is very satisfying to hear artists like Lady Gaga, who you had mentioned that, like, it's refreshing that they can, like, that Lady Gaga can speak and, like, take the time for herself to recover. I think that Lady Gaga has kind of been great for this. Like, she's always been very active and very vocal about issues, especially relating to issues relating to the LGBT community. And very much around that. And I think a lot of what the conversation has been around on Audioface and elsewhere is about mental health and how allowing artists to take space, because, again, another ad nauseum point at the end of the day, artists are people too. They are people who communicate this music to us, and they are going through things and they document those things, but sometimes that has to get in the way of the art so that that person can just be a person and heal and grow and then make art as a representation of that growth and that healing. And to bring it back to, like, everything you had brought up thus far and, like, we'll continue to talk about, is that that healing process, we need to let these artists have this healing process, because that will allow that artist to create music in a better setting and context, and it will allow that artist to feel better overall, which I don't understand why we as music consumers should ever fault an artist for wanting to take some time for themselves to make sure that, A, like, they can create the best work for their fans, but B, they can also be honest and true to their work and, like, capable of performing without pushing themselves in this, like, over-glorified, overworking oneself kind of mindset that I think a lot of people still kind of are in in society at large, but also especially in music. Like, we kind of reward working yourself to the bone a lot in music, but, and many other aspects
in
as well.
In any industry. Yeah. It's like...
in education, even. Like, we're rewarded for, like, burning out and, like, working constantly on schoolwork and having however many internships and whatever many extracurriculars, but, like, it's fucking exhausting. Oh. And, like, God forbid you have some sort of, like, emotional thing you're going to. God forbid you have some type of physical thing you're going through. Like, it's not going to be that simple. And it's not going to be that complicated. And artists, I'm glad that artists are more clearly and more openly taking time out to do these things. Mm-hmm. Or, like, in the case of Trent Reznor, where maybe they didn't do that, they're at least opening up about it now so that... I mean, we talked a lot, again, to rehash an old concept of why all this comes together. We talked a lot about the influence that artists have on the musicians they talk about. And a lot of the points I've been making are that it's important for artists to, even if they want to not go too far into it, just acknowledge it. Because just by
like recognize the role that you play in furthering a conversation or just starting a conversation.
And recognize the relevance and power you have with your like celebrity and your talent and your ability to, I mean, make a statement. And even the smallest statements with the fewest words, with even like the fewest opinions, could hold volumes and really change dialogue for the better. It's a unique opportunity.
Whether it's like you covering a song or whether it's you as an artist taking time for yourself, for your own needs. And, you know, I mean, like,
it's all a conversation.
At the end of the day, even musicians, even, as you said, music consumers, we're all just people. And it's just about being there for yourself, and it's about furthering this conversation, this journey into understanding who you are. And that's exactly what Trent Reznor is doing. Who are we to criticize him for, or like, who are we to say that, oh my god, Trent Reznor is no longer a drug addict. Like, his music is not going to be powerful as a result of that. I mean, if I were to go in and listen to his music thinking exactly that and criticize it based on that, then I am not allowing him space to grow, nor am I allowing myself any space to grow. And what's amazing is that he even acknowledges that not the actual events, I'm paraphrasing from the article, he says, not the actual events was an example, and he thinks that it's one of the ugliest records that he's recorded in a really long time. And he did that sober. And for Toki Monsta, you know, she records Lune Rouge after going through 2 brain surgeries, after having to relearn what music sounds like. She even says that when I first heard music after my surgeries, it just sounded like noise. For somebody who has created such eclectic, such amazing music, to hear that same stuff and just think it's noise is so, like, distant from what we and from what I, as a fan of her music, have perceived her to be. But this album is a space for her to start, you know, experimenting with a different sound. She's bringing in, as Pitchfork notes, a melancholy, a different sort of mellowness to her music, and a different dimension of experience and thought and emotion that she hasn't brought before.
Yeah.
And it's so ironic that, you know, at this day and age, we criticize people for saying, like, oh, times are changing, we should keep up with those changing times. And then for us to turn right around and say, oh my god, this new Gorillaz album, for instance, doesn't match up to what my standards of Gorillaz are, or what I think they should sound like. Right. Who are you to say what they should sound like or restrict their growth?
It's a pair. I think there's so much I want to get to there. I'll answer those, like, points kind of backwards, really, because you mentioned Gorillaz. I have to chime in there. Well, not even Gorillaz specifically, but I think in general, as music critics, as you're inaugurally, as you are now, but, like, as someone who's, like, done this podcast for 4 months, so, you know, I know what I'm talking about. but it's... I think critics of music and consumers of music want certain things out of an album. And everyone wants different things. I really like what Sean and I and what I think Tammy kind of, like, really want to see out of artists, which is, like, growth and development and change, a little bit of what makes the artist, like, distinct and unique, while also the ability to keep things fresh or take or do something different. Kind of being unique and, like, making it so not only is this art to represent, like, where I am at this time, this is also art to, like, push the art of music forward, which I think is, like, an important thing. I don't expect every artist to do this. I want to see artists try to do this in their own way within their own parameters. So, like, that's kind of my opinion on that. I want to, because we've handled this kind of, like, going over the details of each of these articles, so I wanted to, like, fill in the details as we're having this conversation. So, to run back to Lady Gaga super fast, we talked kind of about fibromyalgia, and so that condition. Just to define that, fibromyalgia is a chronic disorder characterized by widespread musculoskeletal pain, fatigue, and tenderness in localized areas. And so that's what
Lady basically, Gaga, your entire body is in a shit ton of fucking pain.
Yeah, or as it's called for women every month. Right? And then Trent Reznor, we kind of went into, and, like, he's been talking about sobriety, alcohol, drugs, and things like that. With Talking Monster, I don't know if we had said this yet, but I'll quote from the Pitchfork article. Jennifer Lee, her, like, regular name, was diagnosed with an extremely rare and potentially fatal brain disease called Moyamoya at the end of 2015, and eventually regained her ability to comprehend music. Just to provide context to what Tammy is saying, when she's saying that, like Talking Monster had to kind of relearn the sound of music and relearn their own, like, her own voice and her own style. And not only just, like, relearn those things while you're also kind of, like, relearning other general abilities of brain function, but iterating on that at the same time. Like, she's coming out with an album and she's touring this month. Like, yeah. Right now. Like, this is happening. And so,
oh no, she's already toured Asia.
Yeah.
Like, I had no idea she was going through any of this until she actually, like, this, until this article came out, and that was her big release.
You had brought up Talking Monster coming to Berkeley, and, like,
while I was in Geneva.
Yeah, we get it. You traveled to Europe, and it did change your life.
Well, okay, well, no, the point is, I had you specifically buy the tickets for me.
Well, I didn't go through all the details of that, but point is, I'm aware of Talking Monster, and, like, I hadn't known about, like, the context with which she was going with this album in the first place. But bringing this all together, what brings the story of Lady Gaga and Trent Reznor and Talking Monster all together is that using, like, at the end of the day, music is an art, and it's an art to be used and interpreted for multiple reasons, but all three of these artists are relating their relationship between music and recovery. How, through music, you can recover, like, actually work through your recovery, but also what music looks like during recovery. So, like, when we talked about Trent Reznor, we said that, like, and Trent Reznor said that, yeah, it was rough sometimes. Like, not only musically, but, like, I think for Trent Reznor, what he's trying to say, at least the way I interpret it, is that the music at that time, while he was sober, even though it was, like, ugly and bad in his opinion, it was a reflection of what he was going through through sobriety and through, like, being, like, free from alcohol and drugs in a sense. It was a direct reaction to what he was going through at that time. And, again, I love when stars acknowledge that recovery is not just, oh, I'm on the path to recovery and things are going to get better. No, oftentimes recovery is just, like, things getting even worse.
No, it's facing your demons. The demons that you have tried to suppress for so long, they are back. You have to look them in the eyes and stare them down. And that requires so much effort. It requires so much power that you have to summon
and
as a person.
Persistence as well. Because you can't, it's when demons like this, not to get too, like, personal, but, like, when demons like this are bothering you for a long period of time, It's not just something you can just, like, look at and address. Not trying to be accusatory. Just not something you can look at and address and go, like, oh, this is something I can handle in one fell swoop. No, it's something that...
No.
It's something that comes up. It's something that's second nature. It's something that gets there. And I don't want to go down too far down this, like, rabbit hole, because Trent Reznor might be the odd one out in that Tiz is relating to a mental illness, while Lady Gaga and Talking Monster, I would say, is more of, like, a physical illness thing. But, I still think there's overlap in the sense that what the music is illustrative of is that showing that recovery process and showing, like, how that works. I think that's just super fascinating.
I mean, like, even mental illnesses are through physical reactions that you have to trauma, to pain, to anything, really. And sometimes it isn't even born out of trauma or pain, whether it's like clinical depression or anxiety. But, you know, like, at the end of the day, it's about recognizing that you have needs, that you aren't here to continue serving other people.
Right, yeah. I was just reading in the Talking Monsters, like, more of her, like, story and what she was going through, and, like, most people with her condition don't live past 40, because it's the way the blood travels through the brain, yeah. Which is so crazy, like, how it's just going through the wrong, like, it's going
vessels.
Through the wrong,
yeah vessels. Because it's, like, it's not reaching enough blood in, like, one area, so it starts using different routes, and then that, like, kind of inflates those areas into a lot of intention. Where it's not, yeah. like, used to it, and that's how it affects them.
Moya moya means a puff of smoke in Japanese, because of what kind of dust.
Because of the way it looks in, like, the scans, too. Because it literally is, like, an inflated region of, like, the blood, like, vessels.
But I will speak... I'll try to speak a little bit out of... I'll bring this back to music, but I think in recovery, from what I've experienced personally and from what I've experienced through other people... So much about recovery is about the emotion that goes into it. Mm-hmm. Whether it's physical or not. I've seen people with in fairly bad physical shape who kept good spirits and were kind of able to get through it. Because I think a lot of what recovery is at that point is... I mean, we've seen the effectiveness of placebos and how much mindset really matters when it comes to... recovery in a physical sense or in a mental sense or in an overall psychological, overall emotional sense. It's your mindset. It's the ability that you can keep going, that it's not that bad, or that, like, you can reach your goal, you can reach your mm-hmm. potential. Not having your physical or emotional, like, disabilities or, like, impairments as a stopping you, but having that as something that enhances your story. And in... it makes it something that you overcome and, like, become, like, super... like, it's something you have power over.
It's just a stepping
stone. You gain power over.
It's honestly, yes. It's just a stepping stone. Like, even personally, for me, like, the shit that I've been through, for me, it's been, like, being a survivor doesn't define me. You know, all the steps that I've taken in the last 2 years to overcome that have not been about me being a survivor... but really, the way that I see it today and the way that I've been seeing it for at least the last year is, shit, I am so full of power and strength to overcome what has been in my path. And I think that that's exactly what it is for these artists. And I'm so happy to see them give space to what they're experiencing, because if anything, it's gonna make them stronger. It's gonna make them so much more confident moving forward. And who they are as a person. And that makes their music all the more powerful.
And at the end of the day, I don't mean to cut you off, but at the end of the day, not only is it going to make them stronger, think of all of the people who look up to these people, who are going through similar things.
Exactly.
Who don't have the mm-hmm. ability and resources to, like, go out and express their journey through music, but still feel alone in whatever they're going through. And they'll be able to look at Lady Gaga and, like,
wait, and say, like, I'm dealing with fibromyalgia. Lady Gaga's dealing with fibromyalgia.
Yeah.
I should not feel like I have to go to my 9-to-5 job all the damn time. Like, because Lady Gaga's able to give herself some space.
Yeah. Or, like, even if it's not, like, that specific thing, you can see someone going through some sort of thing and being able to look at, like, that's why I make such a big deal about acknowledging things, is because there is so much healing that goes into the confirmation, not even art, but just the confirmation that you are not the only person dealing with these things. People love hearing that their thoughts are heard.
Mm-hmm.
People love hearing that they're not the only ones to have an opinion. And I think that's so important for other people to get to see and understand and get to really feel in this transparent way. It's a lot to put yourself out there. It's a lot of risk, especially considering how people don't respond to these things, how people can be super hateful. But it's artists like Lady Gaga that honestly, in times where I was, like, questioning, like, who I was as a person, particularly pertaining to, like, my sexuality, it was artists like Lady Gaga and other people who were able to express themselves as who they were. And even if I didn't, like, I mean, Lady Gaga and I, demographically on paper, are very different. But I can see experiences and feelings I've had through her and through her actions. And by seeing her in front of audiences, being herself, being happy, other people cheering for her, I can almost put myself in her shoes and saying, not as an artist, not talent-wise, but, like, I can be the person that you are being and be supported for it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so different from what I've experienced in my life, where I'm beating up on myself, other people are saying the wrong things, either intentionally or unintentionally, and that's beating up on me, and all these things are internally beating me down, and that's harder for my recovery.
It's because it's all a facade. It's because people keep thinking that you have to be put together. I mean, like,
and people run on the assumptions that other people have put together, therefore they have to be, because we don't talk about these things openly.
And whether it's social media, or whether it's just friggin' celebrities being open and honest and having that conversation and saying, I am a struggling person, and putting it out there, like, that's so important for them to recognize, but also as us, like,
for
consumers of music, to also be able to acknowledge and remember and be cognizant of, you know?
Yeah. It's a reminder, it's a beacon of hope for a lot of people that, I mean, I don't want to be perfect, like, oh, no matter what you're going through, everything will be okay. No, part of what these artists are saying is that, no, it's not going to be perfect, and it's going to suck a lot,
mm-hmm.
and it's not going to instantly fix, but it's about being in it for the long haul, it's about giving yourself the space to recover and heal, and being unapologetic for it, and not, like, taking other people's shit and telling you what, not letting other people dictate how much you're supposed to work or give of yourself. You should be the only person who dictates how much of yourself to give, because that's real individual liberty, and that's real, like, personal accountability and, like, personal empowerment.
And expression.
Yeah, which is all music. That's what it's about. It's expression for our enjoyment. And so,
audio face.
Yeah, when that expression,
the face in front of the audio.
Or behind the audio.
Or behind it.
Also, it's just synonyms of Radiohead put together. But, no, all in all, I am...
Get out. No wonder you bring Radiohead into every single episode.
I mean, you're not just figuring that out, right? But
so now it's like, you have to. Even if Sean isn't here, you have to.
Now it's just a running gag. Whatever, Radiohead deserves it. And, like, yeah.
As long as you don't turn into Archer.
But, I mean, like, let's bring that back. A lot of A Moon-Shaped Pool has to do with, like, the most recent Radiohead album has to do with the fact that Thom Yorke's wife just died. And a lot of that is him processing those emotions through those lyrics. And especially because I relate songs on A Moon-Shaped Pool to deaths I've personally experienced in my family and, like, the deep meaning that holds to me. Like, even though that's not some, like, some big issue to rally around, death is not like something we march out in the streets and protest about. It's often a very personal, inward experience.
Wait, hold on. Death is not something we march out onto the streets and rally about?
Yet. I mean, usually in, like, okay.
I'm sorry, I'm just thinking about the whole, like, protests that, like, all the protests I've experienced at Cal, initially, at least for me, as an incoming freshman, started with the Trayvon Martin and, like, not Trayvon Martin, sorry.
General, like...
like, the Black Lives Matter movement.
Okay, well...
but that's a detour.
By... So, yes, I guess if we were, like, parsing words.
Death in some political sense is something that we do march about.
I'm talking about death, well, I mean, not to get too political, but there's a difference between death and murder. And one is, I think
yes.
What you're talking about are murder,
yeah.
Which is something that, like, could have feasibly been prevented and is thus something you protest because you want to prevent it in the future versus death, which...
As in, like, oh my god, somebody died.
Yeah, death, which is an inevitability. Mm-hmm. Natural causes are, like, not, but, like...
No, very, very important distinction. You were totally right.
Right.
But, like, for me, when I think death, I'm just like...
Yeah.
I mean, person people, is dead, period.
Yeah, people protest death, but I think the manner in which end death is very important. Yes. And so, like, a case where... I think cases where the death is, like...
Okay, we don't actually need to go into this.
Right, yeah, but... In cases where death, where it's not murder, where it's usually an inward thing, where loved ones have to recover and go through that story. But no, a lot of Tom Burke's music in that album was an expression of coping with death. And, I mean, yeah, as I've said probably ad nauseum, like, way overboard at this point, music is supposed to be about processing those emotions and kind of sharing that with people. And letting that resonate and sharing that mutual experience, mm-hmm. both sonically with what you enjoy, but also what you feel, what you experience, and what you get out of the song. And, I mean, all three, well, I mean, with Trent Reznor, I hope, I mean, he's been getting bucks at Apple Music, and he just released an album with Nine Inch Nails that I enjoyed parts of. Lady Gaga and Talking Monster are both about to release new music, and I think... Especially given that context, I'm going to be listening to both albums with a very profound perspective and knowing who both of the artists are behind the albums and then being able to really take that all in as a work and take that in as a representation of what they've come through with. And I'm just really excited to hear that because that's gonna, like I said, it's gonna inspire a lot of people. It's gonna help a lot of people. And I think that's some of the best... aspects of what music can do for people. She nods in agreement. Well said. I say. I do think I say things well. Any last words on this?
No.
Sips water.
I think that you could... I feel like we more or less did discuss the same thing about the excitement for their future stuff or content. But, like, I already made those comments before.
Right.
So you might be able to, like, tie those in to this part. Yeah. But, yeah, no, it's exciting. Like, music changes, artists change, and the way that artists present themselves change, whether it's physically, whether it's through their music itself, or, you know, however. But change is exciting when it's for the better, and when it's as a means of positive growth and being more acknowledging of other people's experiences.
Let's all hug each other.
Tries not to get too political.
Alright, that was an excellent conversation.
Let's
thank you for having
get
me that.
Political. Talk
oh,
politics
God.
To me. Do you remember that joke?
Yeah.
Talk politics to me?
Yes. No, we should. I've been wanting to start like a political podcast for a while. I don't think I have time to, but it would be fun to. Please catch... Oh, if you're listening to this podcast, you'll definitely want to stay tuned to some of the things I'll be working on. I'll plug at the end, but if you're interested to the political side of me that I often hold back for the purposes of this podcast, people being able to unite under music, me being able to escape from politics for a little bit and my sanity, I'll talk about that a little bit later. But let's move on to, like... sorry. We've consumed a lot of alcohol. Let me reimburse you for that.
Excuse me. I'm like sobering up right now.
Me too. I'm on my sobering up glass of wine. After this, I should be pretty set. Thankfully, Berkeley's a walkable city, so you don't have to worry about endangering any other people. Anyways, last thing I want to talk about is Tammy, this might be the last you ever hear of her. Not really. I think we'll have you on the show again. But no, we'll have you on the show again. I think we'll like this. We'll see how Sean likes the episode, though. He'll be the deciding factor. But one reason I consider you to be qualified enough to be on such an esteemed podcast platform is because, you have your own... Like, music is something you... It's a hobby of yours. It's something you fundamentally enjoy. Curating music is something you really enjoy. And, we'll be linking to one of your Spotify playlists, which me and many of your friends have, like, really enjoyed listening to,
because
you're really
very enthusiastically, yes, because I spent so much time curating this. For those of you listening, it's called Smooth Melts, although because of Spotify's algorithms and its relatively lack in popularity, you won't be able to find it.
Okay, so here's the thing.
Do check out the link.
So here's the thing. So in the show notes, you'll find many links to many of the things we've referenced here that you cannot fully interpret and enjoy from audio alone. But also in the show notes, I will be including a link to Tammy's Stellar playlist, as well as her Instagram profile, where you can check those out. But for starters, I think in general, so I want to talk about playlist building in general, and then I want to talk about your playlist specifically, but in that order. So, the reason I love, there are a lot of music streaming services, but I always have liked Spotify the most because A, it's multi-platform, so it doesn't matter whether you're iPhone, Team Android, whatever, like Team Palm, Team Windows Phone, whatever, you can probably, don't check that, but you can use Spotify anywhere. And B, there are a lot of social features built in. You and I have made pretty great playlists together, just from, like, we can make collaborative playlists together on Spotify and share those, and it's promotes for a lot more of the sharing that matters. Spotify as a service, and this is not an advertisement for them at all, but if you would like to, please pay me. It's allowed for a lot more sharing than I think some of the more closed-off platforms, Apple Music, Tidal, Google Play Music, etc., don't have. So, it's awesome for creating playlists, and, like, playlists are the mixtapes of our day. Like,
they are.
Yeah, because people used to, like, I'll make a mixtape for a loved one or whatever. But, like, no.
Yeah.
We have playlists. As usual, we figure out how to do something better. And so, like, I think playlists are, like, a super important topic to discuss. Mm-hmm. And knowing how to build the right playlist and knowing what to look for is, I think, an interesting topic that I think Tammy can provide a lot of insight with. So, without further ado, giving that context, what do you think about, Tammy, when you're building a playlist? What do you think about when you want to figure out what songs go in what order? We talked about my little, like, fake statistics quadrant thing.
Your fake statistics quadrant, yes. Yeah, so, like, I guess more or less reverting back to the Foo Fighters and their album, one of the biggest things that biggest issues that I had with the album was the flow and the transitions between their music. You know, listening to albums is, you know, it's like hearing a story. And whether
I absolutely agree.
Whether it's The Life of Pablo or whatever, you listen to the music in order. And listening to Foo Fighters and, what was it? Concrete and Gold. Listening to Concrete and Gold in order didn't seem as if, you know, the end of one track necessarily flows smoothly into the next track. Run the Jewels, RTJ3, every single track just seamlessly transitions into the next. Same with Gorillaz. Same with K-Tronada. You don't even realize that the next song has started until you actually, like, go back and check on your device that, wait, I'm listening to the next song. And
I want to hop in super fast. So I didn't get that feeling. Well, with RTJ3, I did feel that. It did really feel well composed as an album. I have talked about this a lot on the podcast before, is how I review an album is, again, how the songs sound apart individually from each other, but I also want to hear about how these songs sound together as a full art piece. I really pay attention to that. I didn't actually disagree with you. I didn't think, I mean, we don't have to make a full conversation about this unless you want to. I didn't really think the Gorillaz album was perfectly well put together. I think the little, like, transition things are a nice, like, way to add some cohesion, but as an album, it didn't play through super well to me. But knowing Gorillaz to the level that, like, you and I know, or, like, we know how the role that the animated characters play within the tone of each song, it made sense in that way. But not in a normal way as, like, listening through to the album, listening to see if each song, like, flows into each other, unless you include the transition parts. And yeah. I always consider transitions to be a little bit, like, kind of a lazy
way
to
pick it up. Well, so, like, okay, so Gorillaz definitely did have certain, like, interludes.
We're talking, for the record, talking about humans. I would say that Plastic humans. Beach and Demon Days had pretty good flow. Demon Days is pretty seamless, but humans specifically.
As an album, yes. As an album, humans was debatable. But I'm not necessarily talking about the interludes so much as paying attention to the way that one song ends and the other song begins.
Okay.
And that is one of the key things that I kind of consider when I make a playlist, is whether it's my sex playlist or my workout playlist.
Whoa there.
Just jump right into it. But yeah, no matter what the mood of the playlist is, it really has to be about the way that you transition into something. And, you know, deviating a little bit from Smooth Melts, which is my most popular playlist.
if I did say something.
Well, it is the one that I've curated the most. But there are other playlists that I've had, like WWMU, and some of my playlists are just titled abbreviations.
For the record, are the ones you're titling, are they public? Because if they're not public, no one's going to know what the fuck you're talking about.
Oh, no, yeah, they are. So, okay, WWMU, that's weird. Spotify didn't transfer over my playlist descriptions.
Let's not even get into the long diatribe that's involved Spotify and handling Tammy's playlists. Let's
not. Yeah, let's not. But, okay, WWMU is waves and sounds and music that's, you know, very pleasing for me to make wake up to. But it's, you know, that sort of sound that reminds me of the ocean or being by the sea. It's also supposed to be a gentle mood or vibe to wake up to. And listening to music for me is a lot about resonating with the sort of mood or space that I'm in, emotionally speaking. So, you know, my other playlist, Gentle Mornings, which has some overlap with WWMU, it's about what do I consider to be music that's, you know, a sort of mellow transition into my day. In some ways, it has to be uplifting. In other ways, it has to kind of have that gradual, like, ascent into being active and being, you know, ready to, like, actually move on with my day, not just being stuck in a sort of daydream of, like, I'm still stretching, I'm still getting out of bed, the birds are chirping,
I just want to, like, bring everything together before you move forward. Mm-hmm. So when you're making a playlist, rather, in case you couldn't hear me pouring that extra glass of wine.
I'm sorry.
I will buy you more, I promise. So it seems what a lot of you're saying, when it comes to building a playlist, you look into the mood that you want the playlist to capture. You look into how each song, like, chronologically, like, applies, and, like, how well does the song go well with the song before it, to the song after it. You're looking for those things,
mm-hmm.
and you want to make sure that you keep a tone. Even though that tone is inconsistent throughout the whole playlist, that tone shouldn't feel abrupt. It should feel gradual, like, if the playlist isn't centered around the entire tone, at least the tone, like, grows and goes through
and develops. And yes. Develops. Is dynamic, as we've spoken about music, is dynamic.
I mean, I'm sorry, I will let you continue, but a lot about what we talk about, like, it revolves around the same music, and I mean, the same values and the same standards. We want music to be dynamic, we want it to be, I mean, like, kind of inspiring, but we also want it to, like, fit a certain purpose, at least when it comes to building playlists. I mean, we talked about all of your artists being, like, super open-ended in general when they're performing art and works,
yeah.
But this is specifically revolving around playlist creation, where it's a lot about curating a tone or message or a feel you want people to get, mm-hmm. or a vibe, it's the vibe you want to get.
Exactly, and for me, you know, it's a little bit difficult sometimes because I listen to music and I can interpret it, as anyone can, in multiple ways. And for me, sometimes it's like one song matches a certain vibe or it matches another. So if you actually listen to multiple playlists that I've made, then you'll see certain songs do pop up here and there. But part of what creating a playlist for me is about, primarily, does the flow transition really well? And whether it's from the beginning of that playlist, like Gentle Mornings, so for instance, Gentle Mornings starts off with the song,
This is the name of your playlist, by the way. And so, we'll figure this out later. Which one of the, fuck it, we'll do it live. Are we gonna book a link to all of these playlists, or just a couple?
Okay, do you want a link to just one, or do you want to just, like, link to my profile?
I'll link to your profile, and I want to link to your most recent playlist, the one you've been, like, sharing with a lot of your friends recently, because I think, like, that's a really good stepping in point for your playlist. But, like, as someone who's been listening to Tammy's playlist on an unprofessional sort of level, like, just, like, out as a friend, like, oh, let me check this out, like, I really love the way you curate music.
Oh, thank you. Well, okay, so a lot of it, honestly, is just listening to that music, and sometimes it's not even it's not an involved process throughout where I'm sitting down and I say, I'm gonna make a playlist that's gonna connect to this vibe. It's really just me listening to music, new music, whenever, and then saying, you know what, this really matches this mood that I'm perceiving. And there have been so many new playlists also that I've created, like, on the go, where I'm just like, this song would be great for another mood. And it's just kind of adding on and building on to that. And Smooth Melts, for me, it started off as just adding songs to a playlist, but part of that curation means going back and saying, let me listen to the first song and let me see how well it transitions into another. Like, at one point in Smooth Melts, this is towards the end because this is the part that I was curating most recently. So there's one of my favorite songs, No Wrong, No Right, remixed. It's by Terrace Martin. It's a 7-minute song. It's fairly long, but it kind of has its own mood. But there are other songs that I've been listening to that I kind of want to add on into my playlist, and I'm thinking to myself, how do I incorporate these other songs around this mood? Well, a playlist isn't linear. I mean, if we want to go back down to stats and math, it's not linear. You know, you might rank an album as saying this song is a 3, this song is a 6, this song is a 5. I want to make sure that they're all within the same range. But part of it is like trig. You want to see like a sine curve. You want to see that wave, like, going up and down and up and down. But
you've lost this poli-sci major.
Okay. Well,
no,
okay.
I'm kidding. Just continue.
Dynamics. Just at the heart of it, dynamics is what I'm trying to get at. That making a playlist does not mean saying I'm going to start off at mellow and I'm going to end at like metal and rock, like, just, you know, extremely,
you're not gonna,
like,
start off
exciting.
Easy listening and end at, like, screamo.
Exactly. I'm not gonna start at easy listening. I'm not gonna end at screamo. I'm gonna keep moving in and out and weaving throughout whatever moods, but moods that match the same sort of vibe.
So
it's really hard to describe because for me, it just kind of clicks when I listen to a song, and for anybody else, it might click as well. But the point is, you kind of latch on to whatever you're envisioning. The way I described Smooth Melts, the reason why I named it Smooth Melts is my favorite, because it's literally like you're sitting in a couch, a sofa, an armchair, or your bed, and you're just lying there listening to the music, melting into your seat the way that chocolate melts on the tip of your tongue. It's smooth, it goes in easy, and it's just, it consumes you. The flavor, the vibe, whatever it is that you latch onto, it consumes you. And that's what this playlist is.
Intended.
You smoothly melt into your chair.
Like chocolate.
Like chocolate on your tongue. I love...
So I want to...
Chocolate,
like,
so I'm sorry, I had to go there.
Let me... restrained comment. I will... Like, I will kind of like.
Is it fried chicken or is it friggin' big dicks? Which one? Take your pick.
Take your pick. I will kind of like echo how I interpreted like what you said. So when you're creating a playlist, it has to like flow in together. And what flow means is there's some parameters. You kind of want to stay within a vibe that doesn't necessarily mean genre, although you don't want to like skip genres too much to where it's too much of a jump, because then it doesn't have a flow. What you want to avoid is, I think, volatility when you're making a playlist. You want something that, ideally, bless me, whatever you want to do, I don't know. But what you want to do when you're
creating... You're excused.
Leave my presence! when you're under the trees that I can open them on Christmas. When you're creating a playlist, you want to make sure that each song eases into the other and each song provides a platform for the other. A platform for the other to, like, pick up where the other song left off while also at the same time allowing that song to stand on its own within that playlist.
Mm-hmm.
And then lead on to the next thing.
Exactly.
So you want to maintain that dynamic while within that playlist, within like making sure each song like takes something from the former, does something on its own, leads into the next song. It also kind of like says something about that playlist as a whole and makes that statement and can also kind of stand out by itself.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about playlist making and like mixtape creation, I think, was so special and unique because at the end of the day, this is all a very personal thing. And so it's a personal, like music, playlists and mixtapes are a personal expression of the way the creator feels. But it's also a personal expression of the way the creator wants others to feel and wants others to interpret that word.
You know what this sounds like? It sounds exactly like the way that musicians create music that we consume. Mm-hmm. In a way, making a playlist is a little less... physical
intensive.
Effort. Yeah, it's a little less intensive, but if, you know, an artist needs time, like Gucci Mane, holla. If he needs time to create his album and make sure it's perfect, well,
wop,
hey, man.
Top, wop.
Take your time dropping that top wop.
Catch Gucci Mane's album coming out Woptober 17th.
Can we just, from now on, just refer to October as Woptober?
Wait. Woptober, baby. We're seeing gorillas on Woptober for this. We're at Woptober on my finals. My midterms, I mean.
Oh my god. Yeah, so it's really about, like, sensing that tracks are unique and you don't want one to overshadow another, but you want to make sure that they still, you know, smoothly transition into one another and aren't necessarily volatile, you know, opposite ends of the color wheel to each other.
So I have a point of that. A, because I was an art student in high school. Colors on the opposite ends of the color wheel are called complementary colors.
I know.
So they're supposed to work together. I'm not gonna get you for that gaffe. What my, real question was...
But how about opposite ends of the number line?
I mean, -3 and +3, you know, they got connections. Nevertheless, I don't want to get pedantic over that, like, whatever.
We'll just cut that out.
We've been talking for hours. I'm not going to get you on that. But what I do want to get you is I want to pin you down a little bit more on what are the parameters around how far you go. Because you don't want a playlist to feel too static. You want it to feel dynamic. So how, like... Using this or any one of your other playlists as an example, how do you approach genre changes? Or how do you approach genre shifts?
Subgenres! Like, literally, that is it. It's so funny, as you were saying that, I was thinking about exactly that. The beginning of my playlist, Smooth Melts, like, it's a huge throwback. And... You know, you slowly ease
in. Tell the audience some of the songs that
okay.
they respect. Some of the,
so we start off
give with... Give us some of the hits. Don't go through, like, everything. Like,
all right, well, we start off with, like, Nina Simone, Ne Me Quitte Pas. Like, we're not even speaking English, you know? And the next song, you go, handsome boy,
Handsome boy, oh my god, that is a throw fucking back.
Handsome boy modeling school. Yeah.
Handsome boy modeling school. Like, this album, the album White People, If It Wasn't For You is one of my favorite songs.
Oh my god.
Like one of my favorite
songs. De La Soul!
How about your boy?
I'm queuing that up. Anyways, so, like, it's a huge throwback, but I eventually ease my way into artists like Portishead, Uncle, and Black Sheep, or, what's his freaking name? Tom Misch. Yeah,
and
Tom
do you do that deliberately, or does it kind of naturally happen?
Honestly, like, part of it is deliberately because I don't want to keep recreating the same sound, necessarily, you know?
Right.
Like, I make an active effort to make sure that I don't put too many artists, back-to-back with themselves. So, like, here you see Broken by Gorillaz and Left Hand Suzuki Method. But those are the only two, like, back-to-back songs, at least for that area. Sometimes you really need that artist to kind of help you carry on and transition into another vibe. But if you can find something else, like, that's great. But the thing about playlists is, at least today, the great thing about playlists versus mixtapes is that you can keep adding onto them and you can keep rearranging their track list, you know?
You're
and
right.
So, if I were to find another song that I think works as a better transition, I can go and put it in. But a playlist is always a work in progress unless you say, like, I've moved on from this and I want to focus on something else. For me, Smooth Melts has been my longest occurring project that I've actively put an effort into and, you know, gone back and rearranged intro songs or, like, the middle parts of it or the ending, you know, and added on more and built on that. And that's what's so amazing about a playlist being dynamic, is that you can go back and you don't have to say, this is the end. I can keep working on it and I can keep building off on that sound into whatever I want, or I can say, like, this works for some other nuanced vibe that I connect with.
Right.
Which is exactly my thought process. Like, I am experiencing a differently nuanced but somewhat similar vibe, and I want to work on that.
I have an interesting comment that I'm coming up with because
this is my take.
This is my third glass of wine.
A hot take.
Mm-hmm. But I think what you're getting to is, I've been making a lot of comparisons between playlists and mixtapes, right?
Yeah.
And I think that what you're getting to is that one of the technological advances of a playlist is that it is dynamic. Mm-hmm. You can tweak, you can change, you can modify, you can add, you can even subtract. This reminds me a lot.
Yeah.
Statistics, you mean.
Statistics.
Baby, please tell me more about what was it? I totally forgot. God damn it! I forgot my statistics related pickup line. I want to die.
He's fumbling.
Can you tell I'm not a math major? No, what I honestly wanted to talk about, confidence intervals. That's the joke I was about to make.
Oh my god, get out!
I was about to reference confidence intervals. I'm like, baby, I bet with a 5% confidence interval that you can... Not mind. I'm just gonna stop right there because this is being recorded.
Just get to the point, man. Get to the point.
Alright, what this reminds me a lot about is what Kanye West's Life of Pablo was originally intended to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because the idea around that album is that he was, or Kanye West was going to update the album constantly with little tweaks and changes. And we saw that. Like, I remember Feedback changed slightly. I love the original version of Feedback more, just the way it's instrumentally laid out. But
yeah.
Each individual song, like Famous, changed a little bit slightly in a couple of iterations. And, like, that hasn't been touched lately just because, like, you know, presumably, and, like, as we've heard of rumors, Kanye's working with other things. I think he's got a project with another artist, as well as something he's working on, a new, like, solo album on his own. But that idea of the organicness and fluidity of music that wasn't possible back when music was limited to a physical medium is kind of fascinating. I don't think an artist can really do that with an album, because you kind of expect albums to be snapshots and static moments of an artist's expression and opinion. But playlists can move and change and kind of define their own space and what they're meant to be. And so through those parameters, I think you can make any changes you want to, kind of like you said, and that's kind of like the nature of the game. I think that's just like super cool about playlists.
Yeah, and I think like honestly the best part about playlists, as somebody who consumes music but doesn't necessarily produce it, I don't have this pressure to kind of say like, oh, I'm coming out with another playlist. You know, I've had 20 something playlists in the works for however long. Sometimes I move on from a mood to a different nuanced mood, and I'm like really resonating with that in my life, and that's all I focus on.
And then they're the go-tos.
You know
what I mean.
Yeah, the go-tos.
Hashtag Cloud9.
Yeah. Or my sex playlist, I'm just saying. Or late night instrumentals.
Allegedly. Late night instrumentals. Actually, yeah, I have like, what you call it now?
No, actually I have specifically late night instrumentals, which isn't full of instrumentals. And then I have a sex playlist, I have a slow sex playlist, I have two different morning playlists, I have a couple of driving playlists.
All phenomenal.
I have a couple of different nuanced dance playlists. So yeah, long story short, the point is, as a person who just wants to make a playlist, a conglomeration of everything that speaks to me, I don't have this pressure to come out with an album like Yeezy with The Life of Pablo and say, like, this is my finished product, here it is, you know? It's never a finished product. And
definitely with Life of Pablo.
Exactly. And so there's so much less pressure, but if anything, you know, if you are trying to work on your own playlist and you're looking to this podcast ending segment for advice on making a playlist, just, you know, kind of come out with it when you feel like you have more or less a sort of when you have, it's not a finished product, but it's something with enough transitions to give your listeners a better, like, sense of what sound or vibe or mood you're trying to recreate.
Right.
And that is the best time to share it, because you feel like, okay, if my listeners, you know, like, jump right in, they'll get enough of, like, whatever they're looking for to kind of get a vibe of what's going on. The one downside, however, to Spotify is that playlists are, like, only possible to listen to in chronological order if you're a premium member. And if you aren't paying for your subscription, then, of course, you listen to everything on shuffle, whether it's an album or whether it's a song that you're trying to listen to. And it does kind of put a hamper on things when I'm trying to create a, you know, smoothly transitioned vibe, as opposed to something volatile.
In case this hasn't been super obvious, the order in which the songs go in matters. And exactly. Yeah, a downside of Spotify is that if you aren't a premium subscriber, then you can't control the order in which you listen to albums.
Exactly.
Or listen to songs, I mean.
Yeah, and it's one major downside to it, but even for people who are premium subscribers, like, I don't know why, I share my albums or my playlists, and they go and they say, like, oh my god, I hit shuffle, and the first song that popped up was, like, blah, 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 and it was amazing, and I'm like, wait, why are you listening to this on shuffle? But no, but, like, you know, sometimes it's curated for exactly that sake, and I put a lot of work into the way that my, you know, playlists are perceived. Like, for instance, Smooth Melts, for some strange reason, don't ask me why, but it always makes me think of the color orange.
Why?
So, if you look at the playlist and you look at the four starting album artworks that kind of, like, present themselves as the artwork for the playlist, you know, whether it's Nina Simone, Handsome Boy, Modeling School, and it's like, all of these album artworks have a bit of orange and have some sort of connection to another. That's just a different sort of jump into the way that my brain kind of connects colors and the way that they should be arranged. Or Soulful Drifts, for instance. Everything has a bit of pink or orange or red in it.
And we kind of started that playlist together, I remember.
Yeah, it was about late night drives.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's a lot, like, It's a lot of color coordination, but that's just me being really, really attentive to detail, which I am, which is why all my stories are Game of Thrones episodes, which is why this podcast has been going on for the last forsaken. It's 10
this is, p.m. This is the Joe Rogan experience of Audio Face Podcast. If you don't know, and maybe you don't, Tammy, Joe Rogan Experience is a podcast in which episodes tend to be 3 hours long.
All right, well, point being, your playlists don't always have to have their artwork looking the same, like matching the same color palette or whatever.
So,
but for listeners, the most key element that I would say matters to me, and I think matters to some of the people who listen to my playlists in order, is about a wide range in artists, in music, and dynamicness, and not just volatile sort of transitions between songs.
So the key part about making a playlist, to sum up everything, and please add on to this, is that maintain diversity, so try to keep...
Are you just reiterating everything I said?
I'm trying to, yeah, because I think if people are listening, if people are listening to this and they want to know, like, yo, how can I make playlists that are as great as Tammy's, which if you want to listen to all of these, or I'll link to... To make things simple, I will link to Tammy's profile as well as
the two or three playlists we've discussed.
Yes, I will link to those in the description of the podcast, so you can listen to these and tell Tammy and I and Sean, he'll be really fucking confused.
Or your friends.
And especially your friends, what you think, and you can share with them. But if y'all want to create your own if you want to start creating your own
playlists.
The key takeaways are to A, pay attention to diversity of genre, of artists, subgenres even. At the same time, diversity is not just like your only step, because you have to make that playlist play together. You have to create your playlist in kind of the same way that Dan, see an album, in that you want it to flow together, while you also want each song to pick up where the other song left off, stand up on its own, and then lead into the next song. Mm-hmm. At least if you're creating a playlist in order, which you should be. So there's those two things. Minding diversity, but also making sure it all works together. Paying attention to the tone. So, like you mentioned with Soulful Drifts, it's like it has a sort of like overall tone or theme with the whole playlist. Anything I missed?
No, I don't want to jump, like, super ahead of myself or kind of, like, compare myself to an actual composer, but making a playlist or making album, making music in general, just kind of making music speak and harmonize is the same as, like, think about it, orchestra pieces. You know, a saxophone sounds nothing like a piano. A piano sounds nothing like a guitar. And a drum doesn't sound anything like a flute. But when you bring all of these different instruments and those groups together, it produces a sound that's really amazing or pleasing to listen to. And in a way, with a playlist, you aren't narrowly focusing on a specific genre, unless that's your goal. But in most cases, my music taste is very eclectic, and my goal is not to focus specifically on a specific artist and all the other artists that sound exactly like them. You know, I want to focus specifically on the mood. And just like an orchestra piece or a composed piece, you want to bring together all these different instruments. They don't exactly sound the same, or you don't always think of them in the same way, but they can come together when you make them, you know,
when you incorporate
crescendos, decrescendos, solos, whatever you want. You know, it's more about making all of those voices play together and being cognizant of that in your creation.
It's really about, like, looking at what your music has in common, what it doesn't have in common, and keeping that in mind when you're figuring out the order. And you may have to listen to that playlist through and figure out, do these songs work together? Should I move these songs around? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an art. It's a process.
Really,
and
is.
Yeah, we don't need to, like, I don't want to, like, I feel like you have the same sentiment. You don't want to, like, step out and say, oh, this is complicated, or this is, like, very much like what artists or composers go through.
No.
But at the same time, you're thinking about the same things that artists and composers think about, mm-hmm. which is order, which is sound, which is cohesion, which is how it all brings together and what story it tells in the end.
Exactly.
Which is like how do I think you build a successful playlist that people like want to enjoy and want to listen to. I mean, I've played your playlists more than I will let myself admit for fear of inflating your ego.
But too late, it's already starting to get inflated.
But, well, it's about to get inflated because you're about to get it heard by many more people. But, I mean, it's, that's what, the same things I look for in a new artist's album, I try to incorporate as well as look for in other people's playlists, which is that sense of cohesion, that sense of something a little bit different, something a little bit outside the box, but something that also feels like it works together and wasn't slapped together. Mm-hmm. Seeing that attention to detail and those aspects to make my listening experience overall pleasurable and enjoyable is what really stands out to me. I think what really separates a good playlist from a moderate, like,
decent a ragtag playlist. Group of, like, songs.
Correct, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which none of your playlists are. In completed form, or, like, near form.
At least the public ones, exactly. Correct. I put the other works in progress in private mode, which is great to have.
Right. Or, you know, the set plays that are just too good to share. You know what I'm talking about. Right. Anywho's, that would be... So, yeah, we've talked a lot.
We have, yeah.
Yeah. That is the end of this entire, like, whole audio face, like, kind of thing episode this weekend. I'm calling this, it's funny. I've decided how this episode is going to play out throughout the end. And, yes, we have recorded for about, like...
5 hours? 10 hours?
6 hours.
10 hours. I love how I'm like, it's 10 p.m. 10 hours, clearly.
Great statistics work, Tammy.
Statistics, because everything is statistics.
Oh, naturally. So really fast, I will link to Tammy's Spotify profile and her playlist in the description. If you want to follow Tammy on Instagram, your photography Instagram, where you like do photography stuff from time to time, is ga.tammy. So I'll link to that. It's GAU.TAMI on Instagram. Check that out for cool photos and things
that I have yet to update.
You know, we're students. We're all doing different things.
Bear with me. Be patient.
Like no, it's
no legit. I have like different like folders from 4 or 5 different countries that I have yet to post.
No, I totally feel that. If you're in the creator kind of space, you can definitely relate to you. I mean, like. Just look at my desktop, fill all of these icons of projects that are currently in progress or things I don't want to move around for fear of, like, confusing my video editor and saying that, oh, these files have moved into a different place, got to relocate them all. That's just the creator's struggle of having too much content.
You're about to reach, like, the end of your desktop and run out of space.
One of the tragic part about this was clean on Monday. This was only, like, a row and a third on Monday.
On Monday?
On Monday. We are at Friday, and we are here. Like, we are... 9, 10, 11, 15, 16, 17 rows.
Hold on.
My computer has left 20
rows. Can we go over the two files, the two WAV files?
Please don't go over any of them. Dicks!
Dicks!
Okay, this is...
What are those?
This is unrelated to the podcast.
What are those?
This is unrelated to the podcast at all, but yes, I have a file, dicks.wave, on my desktop. And the reason for that, if you really want to know audio face inside baseball, is because Sean records his part of the podcast on his end, I record on my end, he sends it to me, and it doesn't matter how it gets sent, because no one ever sees the file name anyways. And so he can name it whatever he wants to. And so, like, at SW Suarez on Twitter and Instagram, if you want to get more clarification on that. But yes, Sean...
just call him out. Just publicly call him out.
Depends on...
On his dick obsession.
I mean, if you're probably listening to this, chances are Sean has completed his triathlon, and I'm sure he did wonderfully, as he usually does. But if you want to follow Woo! Sean and his, like, triathlete experiences, as well as generally in music, Sean, the general co-host of the podcast, you can follow him on Twitter and Instagram at SW Suarez. Tammy, you're on Instagram at god.tammy.
GAU.TAMI.
Yes, which I will link to in the description to make things super easier for you.
And we don't have to link my personal account.
Yeah.
I mean, unless people want to.
It's totally up to you. But
I feel like we could.
But I mean, sure, but there's also your website. You have a website, right?
I do. It's linked in my photography account.
Yeah, it's linked in the photography account. I'll link that in the description as well. Thank you so much for joining us. I think people will like the fact... Well, I mean, people will like the fact that like they're getting two episodes for the price of one / two episodes for the price of the episode I should have given them last week when I accidentally fucked up the audio. But nevertheless, let's at least wrap this up quickly. Thank you for listening to hopefully both parts of the Audio Face podcast. Again, really fast. Sean, normal host, will be back next week, and you can follow him on his triathlon shenanigans at SW Suarez on Twitter or Instagram. On Instagram, you can follow Tammy at god.tammy. I will link to that. On Instagram, I'm at Dan from the Internet, and on Twitter, I'm at Dan from the Web. Don't get me started on how annoying that is that they're different. But if you're interested in like political things that I restrain myself from talking about, pay attention to those. I also write for Huffington Post and work a little bit at the Young Turks, so they'll be very fun things to talk about, that, especially with what's going on in Berkeley. But thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me. It was truly a pleasure. This is an amazing conversation, and I'm a little bit flattered that people are actually going to listen to this.
I'm amazed that people listen to this, and thank you to you all, the wonderful listeners, who...
Especially if you stick to the end through my Game of Thrones episode.
Yeah, who keep justifying me spending parts of my Saturdays producing and working through this. I love talking about music. I love talking about music with other people, and I love like sharing these conversations with you. So yeah, reach out to us and all of those things, and we'll see y'all in the next episode. Lots of new music coming out the rest of the year. It's gonna be fun. Gonna have a lot to talk about. And yeah, I'm probably gonna be tempted for the episode. So if you like this, there'll be more. And if you didn't like this, sucks!
Suck a dick, dumb bitch!
Alright, as we both like deuces in the air. Alright, thank you all for joining. In the words of Sean, cheers. How do you want to sign off? Bye!